She writes, quote, I'd wake up in the middle of the night when the rest of the family was asleep and tiptoe down the hall to the living room. I'd plug in the Christmas tree lights and sit on the floor, silently looking up at the sublime sight, the glorious, magnificent beauty of colored lights twinkling and peeking out from the evergreen boughs, illuminating shiny ornaments and quivering strings of tinsel. The tree topper, the Star of Bethlehem, pointed upward to heaven. Good evening for WVXU. I'm Elaine Dio. My guest is author and musician Renee Baker, who wrote that description of her Christmas spirit in the brand new book, Defeating Scrooge, which grapples with what happens when the magic fails to arrive. Renee, welcome.
Thank you, Elaine.
You write that you grew up in Michigan, where white Christmases were the norm, and you've been a professional caroler since the 1990s, and your nicknames include what?
Oh, my carolers call me Mrs. Christmas, Queen of Christmas, and my favorite, Carol Boss, kind of like Cake Boss, only with carols.
And yet you write that once upon a time, some Christmases ago, something difficult happened. Suddenly, there was no Christmas spirit in your heart. Can you talk about that?
Yes, it was a real shocker, because most people who know me think that I have the corner on the market of Christmas spirit, and that might be true, but yeah, one year I just expected it to be there, and it just wasn't, and I tried so many different little things during the season when I was in the heat of all the decorations everywhere and our caroling job, and it was very painful, and I didn't realize until that year just how much my Christmas spirit, or you could call it holiday spirit too, meant to me. So in a way, it was a real blessing to just have that awakening and to know how painful it is to be without your spirit when it's something that you come to rely on. I'll tell you, it's not just a Christmas thing. It's not just a Christian thing. My caroling groups, there's about 30 of us every year from the Broadway community in New York City, and they're a very diverse group. Of course, I have Christians, but I also have Jewish carolers and Buddhist carolers and at least one atheist caroler, but we all recognize this palpable spirit of the season. And we love it, and we hold ourselves accountable to the hallmarks of that, and we find that the people that we carol for are also a very diverse group in New York City, and they all come together in this spirit when we sing the carols together. So I don't want this just to be about Christmas. A lot of us feel that spirit and would be in pain without that spirit when all the holiday decorations are going up, and we just kind of expect it. So when I realized that it was missing and that nothing I was doing was resurrecting it, I just had to sort of power through the season with my theatrical training and bring joy to other people and smile and act jolly. But there was a cold hit in my stomach that whole season. And so it was when I was taking down my tree in January that I was really grappling with what happened. And I traced my steps back. And it turned out to be a full 11 months prior to that December that I'd had this event that shook my faith. The fact is, many people are in pain during the holidays for all sorts of different reasons, and many people won't see it coming. By the time December's here, it can be too late to actually tend to that spirit. So what I did in January was I said, okay, now I figured out what happened. How do I never let that happen again? How can I proactively tend to and nurture this spirit and try to get it back? So I just had this idea right there as I was sweeping up the pine needles off of my floor. Because one of my caroling books was on top of this box that housed one of my men's top hats. And so right under my nose, literally, was my carol book. And so I thought, I just wonder. I've heard carols since I was 10 months old, and I've been singing them forever. But there must be other things that I don't know about the carols. And I wonder if I just start there. So I made a goal for myself to study a carol a week for a whole year, but looking at them in ways I never had before. Who wrote them? How many people wrote them? Where were they living? What were they going through? What prompted it? Who did they touch? And I was just amazed the very first week, in fact, the very first day, to find out what I didn't know. It made me sort of feel like that kid in a classroom shooting your hand up, like, oh, pick me, I know something about this. And I've had lots of people tell me that that's the way they feel too, like they can't wait until it's December so that they can start singing these carols and hearing these carols with their newfound information about it. I just realized that it helped me so much and it's helped some others that I thought I have to share this. And so it was about 4 years after I'd put myself on that journey that I realized this needs to be a book.
Is there a difference between a Christmas carol and a Christmas song?
Technically, I don't know that there's a real answer for that. I think a lot of the songs that we hear on the radio with orchestras or plugged-in music, I think of those more as songs. They're not all carols, although some carols have been turned into music like that. I think most people consider the old hymns and the ones that can be sung a cappella pretty well, carols. I would say that in our caroling book, there's about 4 hours worth of music in there. We even have a whole Hanukkah section. We, with a wink, say Hanukkah carols because that's not really a thing, but they're Hanukkah songs. And we have some of those songs like Let It Snow. It's not Silent Night. It's not O Holy Night or Good King Wenceslas, but it's in our carol book and people request it when we're out caroling together. So I think it's a real fuzzy line.
I'm chatting with a singer and author, Renee Baker, who's got a brand new book out called Defeating Scrooge. And you are actually fascinated by the character of Ebenezer Scrooge and consider him quite a tragic hero.
Yes. A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens has just always been my favorite piece of literature, and I love some of the movies that we've gotten from that as well. Scrooge himself, Ebenezer Scrooge, is such a well-known character. If you say Scrooge, everybody knows who you're talking about. And there's a negative connotation about it. You know, don't be a Scrooge, right? Bah, humbug. But if you really look at him, he's a human being that's had reasons to become bitter. He had a difficult life, and he closed his heart off. What I started to explore was that we all have some Scrooge in us. It's really easy to look at other people and say, you're being a Scrooge. But if we're really being honest with ourselves, there are moments that we act just like him. And in those moments, we could probably trace that back to some kind of pain that we've experienced. I like the idea of recognizing our inner Scrooge and actually giving him a big hug. And that's, I think, a really good first step to healing our ailing Christmas spirit.
And you're serious about the steps. You have actually developed what you call the Spirit Saver process. So it's not just putting on the Bing Crosby White Christmas album and listening. You have to be an active participant in this.
Right. I do invite that. It's an active process. And also, sometimes if somebody promotes my book and it's before Halloween, some people will push back against that and say, no, because, you know, I think they think that we're asking people to go around singing carols all year long and performing them. And that's really not what I'm doing. What I'm doing is more of an introspective, quiet, individual process. And what it's really doing is resetting what I call holiday spirit triggers, you know, their sense memories. I'm also an acting coach, and one of the processes that I like to tap into to help put me and other people into an emotional state that they're looking for in any acting piece they might be doing is sense memory. And I realized after I'd been doing this for 4 years that, oh my gosh, that's what we're doing here. We are resetting holiday spirit triggers at a time of year when we're not expecting it to be there. We're not expecting anything of these holiday spirit triggers. And that is why it works. So that's why starting in January and working through the year was a good idea.
Real quickly, can you tell the story of Handel and where he was in his life when he composed the Hallelujah Chorus?
Well, you know, we all think of him as this great, glorious musician. In fact, he was. He was on a pedestal. He was considered the greatest musician and composer in Europe. But he was riddled with illness, and he was nearly blind and crippled, and people had kind of just forgotten him and his works that were so great. And he was afraid of going to debtor's prison. He was in such bad shape because he'd spent all of his money on doctors trying to find treatments for him. So right when he thought all was lost and he was just days away from a debtor's prison, he got a knock on the door. And there were two great offers that came in that day for him. And one was a friend who had this great idea for this oratorio based on the Bible, but he just couldn't seem to make anything happen with it. So he gave it to Handel. And he was also asked by a gentleman in Ireland to put together an oratorio. So they became one in the same. And that was where you have the Messiah, out of which the Hallelujah Chorus is part. And it was a huge hit. And I love the story of his English debut, because the king was there on the second day of it in England. He was blind. Handel was blind, and he was conducting the orchestra. And when the Hallelujah Chorus part started, he heard all this rustling behind him, and he thought people were walking out. But it was because the king was so moved by the Hallelujah Chorus that he just stood up. And so, you know, when the king stands, everybody stands. So everybody stood up, and that tradition holds true today. We all stand up when the Hallelujah Chorus starts. He lived many years longer. The Hallelujah Chorus not only helped him, but also helped him be a benefactor to many people. My favorite is the Foundling Hospital that saved the lives of 27,000 children who would have been discarded during that time, a difficult time for children. So he was able to contribute the organ and raise lots of money by conducting the Hallelujah Chorus there at the hospital to bring in benefactors.
That is just one story behind one well-known and loved holiday music. The book is full of them. Renee Baker believes that if you know what's really packed into Christmas carols, you might not limit them to just one month out of the year, and these songs can actually help to heal our world. Her new book, Defeating Scrooge, and her spirit saver process combine with her deep religious faith and belief in the power of prayer and meditation and, of course, music. For more information and a link to Renee's music, visit our website, wvxu.org. Renee Baker, happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you too, Elaine, and to all your listeners. Thanks for having me on.
For WVXU, I'm Elaine Deal.